Anna bechoach, gedulat yemincha tatir tzurura. Anna, please, bechoach gedulat yemincha, with the strength of the greatness of your right hand, tatir tzurura, untie the tsar, untie that which is narrow and contracted, meaning that narrow, limited self-sense that we tend to imagine ourselves into. Kabel rinat amcha, sagvenu tahorenu nora. Kabel rinat amcha, receive the song of your people. Sagvenu tahorenu nora, strengthen us, purify us, O awesomeness. So this mystical prayer, Ana Bechoach, goes on to say, Na gibor doeshe yechudecha, kevavat shomrim. Na gibor, please, O divine strength. Dorshe yechudecha, those who foster your oneness, kevavat shomrim, like the pupil of an eye, guard them. This third line is unusual. If we're asking God to guard us, to keep us safe, why are we likening ourselves to a bavat, a pupil of an eye? It seems like it would make more sense to say, please guard us like you would guard a baby, or guard us like a city, but guard us like a pupil? It's a strange idiom. So let's go into this a little bit. What is the pupil of an eye? The pupil is actually the opening through which pours the light that creates the images that we see. So the pupil is essentially a hole. And if you make eye contact with a person, it's really the pupil of the eye that gives you the sense of eye contact being made. That's why in all those zombie movies, when they want to make a person seem like they're dead, they somehow take away the pupils from the actor's eyes. Maybe they do this with special contact lenses, maybe they use CGI, but however they do it, the effect of an eye with no pupil is the effect of there being nobody home. It's a disturbing image to see a person's eye with no pupil because somehow we know intuitively that the pupil indicates consciousness. It indicates that there's someone there, which is interesting because everyone's pupils look more or less the same, right? The color of people's eyes are different. The shape of people's eyes are different. The face in which the eyes are set is completely unique for each person. You can't tell the identity of someone by their pupils, right? You need to see their face. And yet, it's the pupil that tells you that there's consciousness, that there's someone at home. And this fact of the pupil indicating consciousness on one hand, yet also being nothing but an opening on the other, is also a great symbol for who we really are. Are we our bodies? No. Are we our faces? No. Are we our feelings? Are we our thoughts, our personalities? All of these things are part of us, but none of them are essentially us. The only essential ingredient is consciousness. And like the pupil of your eye, your consciousness is simply an opening. It's not unique. It's more or less the same for everyone. And yet, it's the most miraculous and precious thing. Without consciousness, everything else would just be a shell, just a bundle of patterns. So this prayer is crying out in the first line, Tatir Tzurura, untie the bundle, meaning uncover and reveal this essential openness that we are beneath the bundle of patterns of our bodies, of our thoughts and our feelings, so that we can know ourselves as this simple openness, kevavat, like a pupil. Now, there's a certain paradox of consciousness which is also reflected in the pupil. On one hand, the pupil is a simple openness, taking in the whole image of whatever is being seen. And similarly, consciousness is also the simple openness of experience. So in this moment, you may notice there's a certain richness to your experience. There's your sensations. There's your senses, there's the movement of your breathing, any feelings or emotions that might be vibrating in your body, as well as thoughts that arise and then persist for some time and then dissipate. And all of this richness is part of one unfolding experience in the present. And yet, at the same time, when you are aware of the full richness of experience that's arising in this moment, there also arises the choice to entertain some things within your experience and not to entertain other things. For example, some anger arises or the impulse to judge or to complain, and you can notice that it's there, but not act on it. So on the deepest level, you're saying yes to it. You're recognizing that this negative impulse exists in this moment, and that's perfectly okay. But on the level of choice, you can say no to it by choosing not to act on it. You can just let it be there and then let it dissipate on its own. On the other hand, an impulse might arise to really listen to the person talking to you, for example, or to be generous in some way. And you may choose to say yes to that impulse on both levels, right? So first you say yes to its existence, just as you would say to anything that arises when you're being present. But you might also say yes to act on it. So on the deepest level of awareness, there is a single yes to everything that arises in the moment. That's the achdut, the oneness or non-duality of experience. But on the level of choice, there's a yes to some things and a no to other things. That's the duality of discernment, the duality of wisdom. This truth is also reflected in the metaphor of the pupil, in that we generally have two pupils. So on one hand, the pupil is a simple openness to light, which creates a single image, a single experience. That's the achdut, or oneness level. And yet, there are two pupils, hinting at the yes and the no, the duality of choice that arises within the achdut of the present. There's also a hint of this in the Torah story of Bilam the sorcerer. In Parshat Balak, the king of Moab, whose name is Balak, becomes frightened of all these Israelites who are camping in a nearby valley. So he sends messengers out to the mysterious, reclusive sorcerer Bilam to request that he put a curse on the Israelites. At first, Bilam refuses, but after several requests, he concedes and rides out on his donkey. Next, there's a strange and unique passage, one of the only two instances in the Torah of talking animals. The other one is the talking snake in the Garden of Eden. In this passage, Bilam rides out on his donkey through a vineyard when suddenly an angel appears and blocks his path with sword drawn. But only the donkey can see the angel. Bilam is oblivious to it. So the donkey veers off the path to avoid the sword-wielding angel and accidentally presses Bilam's foot into a wall. Bilam gets angry and hits his donkey with a stick, at which point the animal opens her mouth and speaks, "Ma'asiti lacha, what have I done to you?" Bilam yells back, "Because you mocked me. If I had a sword, I would kill you right now." Says the donkey, "Am I not your donkey that you've ridden until this day? Have I ever done anything like this before?" "No," says Bilam. And suddenly, Bilam's eyes are magically uncovered, and he too sees the sword. Bilam bows and apologizes and offers to turn back. The angel tells him not to turn back, but he should be careful only to say the words that the divine will place in his mouth to say. So, Bilam goes on his way and meets up with King Balak, who pleads with Bilam to curse the Israelites. But every time Bilam opens his mouth, he pronounces blessings instead. King Balak tries again and again to get Bilam to curse, bringing him to different places on a mountain overlooking the Israelite camp, as if that would change something. But every time it just comes out more blessings. In Bilam's final blessing, he says, "Ne'um Bilam b'no v'or u'ne'um ha'gever shetum ha'ayin." The words of Bilam, son of Beor, the words of the man with an open eye. Noum shomea imre el, asher machaze shaddai, yechaze nofel ugului einayim. The words of the one who hears the sayings of God, who sees the vision of Shaddai while fallen and with uncovered eyes. Matovu ohalecha Yaakov, mishkanotecha Yisrael. How wonderful are your tents, O Jacob, your dwelling places, O Israel. And the blessings flow on from there. So what's going on here? Why is it that Bilam's donkey perceives the angel before he does? And why do his eyes become uncovered as a result of the donkey speaking to him? And once his eyes are uncovered, how does that allow him to hear the divine voice transforming curses into blessings? So a way to grasp this passage is to understand that the donkey is your own body. There's a tendency to take the body for granted as if it's just a vehicle to achieve your intentions, like a car or a donkey that you ride on. But the spiritual potential of your body is to be a temple of presence, a vessel for the light of your awareness. So at first, Bilam is just hitting his donkey, trying to control it. That's the ego, selfish, angry, and entitled. But when he starts listening to what the donkey is telling him, then suddenly he can see the angel and hear it speak. Meaning, when you become present with your body, anchoring your awareness in your breathing, then you can see clearly the nature of your impulses that arise, and you can hear the angels of your better nature, so to speak. So rather than simply be taken over by your impulses, there's space to really see which ones are blessings and which ones are curses. That's the uncovering of the eyes, so to speak. There's an impulse of anger or an urge to put someone down. You can see that clearly and you cannot be taken over by it. Or there's an impulse of love, of supportiveness, of listening to somebody. That's a blessing and you can choose that. So that's the yes and the no of being conscious. There's a story that when Reb Yosef Yitzchak of Lubavitch was 4 years old, he asked his father, Reb Shalom Ber, "Abba, why do we have two eyes, but only one mouth and one nose?" "Do you know your Hebrew letters?" asked Reb Shalom Ber. "Yes," replied the boy. "And what's the difference between the letter Shin and the letter Sin?" continued Reb Shalom. "A shin has a dot on the right side and a sin on the left side." "Right. Now the letter shin represents fire, and fire makes the light that we see by. The dots on the right and the left are like your two eyes. Accordingly, fire has two opposite qualities. On one hand, it can give us life by keeping us warm and cooking our food. That's the right dot. On the other hand, it can burn us. That's the left dot. Similarly, there should be things that you look at with your right eye and things you should look at with your left eye. You should see others with your right eye, being warm and loving, but see candy with your left eye, not being taken over by that urge to grab at it. But to maintain your presence in your body so as to be aware of your freedom to choose blessing and not curse, you have to be ever watchful. You have to be on guard constantly. Just as the pupil of an eye, kevavat, is an open space of perception, so your awareness is also an open space through which you can watchfully guard, shomrem, the movements and sensations of your body with gibur, with strength. And in so doing, we become dorshe yehudecha, the ones who foster or tap into the oneness of reality, the oneness of this moment. So let's chant these words, kevavat shomrem. As you sing kevavat, like a pupil, open your hands, palms upward to express the openness and transcendence of awareness. And when you sing Shom Reim, guard them, bring your hands in, palms together, intensifying presence in your body. So Kevavat, open hands, be aware of the open spaciousness of awareness beyond your body, the space around your body. Then Shom Reim, bringing in hands and intensifying awareness within your body. So let's sing. Coming to meditation, the three portals, bringing your right hand to your heart and lovingly offering your awareness to this moment as it is with Lecha, breathing in. Lecha. And bringing left hand to your belly, feeling down into your body. Feeling down into your hips, down into your thighs and your knees, into your calves, to your ankles and feet and toes. Shining awareness up into your lungs and heart and shoulders, relaxing any excess tension. Flowing down into your arms, to your elbows and forearms, hands and fingers. And shining awareness into your face and skull, bringing a little smile to your lips and resting your awareness on the flow of your breathing. And affirming this, returning ever more deeply to your body with Naaseh, breathing in. Naaseh. And and bringing right hand to touch your forehead, aware of the open space of awareness itself within which your body is felt, your feelings are felt, senses are happening, but the awareness itself has no borders beyond your body. It's beyond everything, every specific thing that you perceive. With Vinishma, breathing in. Vinishma. Kiss your fingers. Chanting Atahu. You are the divine. Now is the divine. Atahu going in your mind. And you notice your mind wanders, just gently and without judgment, but with firmness, bring it back to Atahu, to presence with your body and your breathing, awareness of the space within which everything is felt, the space of awareness. Atahu, Atahu. And we'll sit for 7 minutes. And closing with the three portals, right hand to your heart, giving permission for everything in this moment to be as it is, offering your awareness as it is, with Lecha, breathing in. Lecha. And left hand to your belly, presence with your body, following your breathing. With Naase, breathing in. Naase. And right hand touching forehead, aware of the space of awareness itself. The open, borderless field within which everything is experienced. Vinishma, breathing in. Vinishma. Atahu, until next time.